This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Coming today, Cliff Van Noy, the president and CEO of the LSU Alumni Association for 4 years. He is with us to talk about what's going on with the graduates of the Old War School. And, oh, by the way, the football season for the Fighting Tigers starts in a month, and Cliff Van Noy will be leading a caravan to Dallas, Texas for the Tigers opener against Miami of Florida. We'll talk with him about much to do at LSU. Also, Mark Ballard, the Capitol Bureau Chief of the Advocate, on what's going on in the world of politics. The latest rumor, the rumor of the day, is that Jeff Landry, the Attorney General, may be giving up his job to try to unseat Governor John Bel Edwards. Now the news on 89.3 WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Ali Baltazar and Becca Dill are producing, and in studio to begin our conversation today is Cliff Van Noy, the president and CEO of the LSU Alumni Association for the past 4 years. He's worked at the Alumni Association since the year of 1981, so 37 years on the LSU campus, and much has changed over that time. And you've not only survived but thrived, Cliff Van Noy. Good morning to you.
I have really, really enjoyed it, and we've got a lot more to accomplish, so we're on our way.
Well, you've got the football season a month from today opening, and we'll talk about that as LSU saunters into the Lone Star State to face Miami of Florida. But today is the birthday, the anniversary of the birth of one William Ab Cannon, Billy Cannon, LSU's only Heisman Trophy winner. Born in the year of 1937 on this date, he would have been 81 years old. He died on the 20th of May. And in 2010, Billy Cannon was the Alumnus of the Year.
Certainly was. And it what a great night that was. And if you've had a chance to know Billy, he is an incredible individual. We had a big loss this year as he passed away, but he'd do anything for anybody. He's just one of those individuals that had a big heart, told it like it was, and what a story he had in terms of coming back from his days in prison and deciding to help the folks at Angola. He had basically taken a program that was in much disrepair and pulled together physicians and the doctors to make it one of the best. What a great,
he
great
went
way to
went
make
out
that
like
happen.
A champ. There's he no doubt he was a fine man, but he had led a full life and had certainly had owned up to his big mistake, and at the end was actually known to poke fun at himself. I remember I not so long ago interviewed him, and I said there doesn't appear to be any dementia despite all the headshots he took. And he said, yeah, you know, once I was knocked out for 20 minutes, he says, but the only telltale sign of any problems I've had is that every now and then I get this overpowering desire to print money.
Yeah. You know, he and Dot would come by the Lott Cook Alumni Center and also the Cook Hotel right on campus, for almost every game, and sit and visit and talk to all the alums and donors and friends that came through. Took pictures with them, had an opportunity to do photographs and autographs. Just really down to earth, great person. Be sorely missed.
Great graduate. It's been a little over 10 weeks, but I think of Billy Cannon every day. And I did not know him well, but he is part of LSU's lore. And a few years ago, Tiger Rag had the 150 most influential people on the athletic department at LSU in the history of the school, and number one was Billy Cannon.
Well, before we go much further, in 2018, you know, we inducted a new class of outstanding graduates into the LSU Alumni Association Hall of Distinction, and it was our pleasure to have Jim Inkster as one of those great graduates who were inducted, and you join a fabulous group of individuals who have done so much and have accomplished so much and have given back so much. So congratulations again, Jim, for what you've built here in Louisiana and in your radio network. It's congratulations.
Well, thank you very much. It was quite an honor and a night that I'll always remember. But Cliff Van Noy, a month from now, about this time, he'll probably be assembling the troops in Dallas. What's going on September 2nd?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, we've been anticipating this trip for a good long while, and we've got a fantastic Traveling Tigers trip. Now, we've been pulling together Traveling Tigers groups for 34 years now, and some great memories over the years and great trips. Wisconsin was one of them. Well, we took 6 charter flights to play Wisconsin in Green Bay Packer Stadium. And, man, what a trip that was. What a trip that was. So this should prove to be another one of those great ones. We've got a charter flight out of Baton Rouge that flies directly into Dallas. We're staying at the Omni Hotel, which is a team hotel in Fort Worth. And the good thing about Fort Worth is when you're downtown in that team hotel, you could walk to every restaurant, every venue, all the fun stuff. We've got a welcome aboard party that gets you started off in the right manner. And then we actually have planned a VIP experience. When you show up to the stadium, you're going directly into the stadium, and we've got a venue for our pregame party that's on field level. So wow. You'll be able to see the team practice and warm
this
up.
This is a Jerry World.
Right? Yeah, this is a Jerry World. This is Cowboy Stadium. And what a fabulous stadium that is, too. Mm-hmm. So everything that we do is first class. You let us do the driving, the flying. We'll get you there. We'll get your luggage where it needs to go. And the experience is always the very best.
All right. For those who have a desire to find out more, what's the best way to contact you and your staff?
Sure. Well, Allie is the person who helps. Allie DePlessis, the person who runs that force now, and her phone number is 578-5612. And
that's
in addition to the full pack,
578-5612. I'm sorry,
5612. In addition to a full package, we also run a ground package for those people who are driving over, mm-hmm. or for those individuals who are coming from a different part of mm-hmm. Louisiana, which is great. And then we'll tailor your package to anything that you need to do. And everything that we do includes tickets. But if you already have your tickets, well, you just subtract that out and off you go.
There you go.
It's a great experience.
The last 24 hours, just to show you how Cliff Van Noy's world works, we know that Coach O appeared before the Rotary Club and spoke yesterday. But also, you've been to 2 other addresses from prominent LSU people, the governor and the basketball coach. What happened with those?
Right. Well, this weekend, we hosted the alumni professionals of the Southeastern Conference. So every group was represented, except Florida. For some reason, Florida didn't want to show up. But it was a great conference. And John Bell Edwards was one of our guest speakers, came by yesterday to welcome and let them know that Louisiana was the place for them to be able, and Baton Rouge was the place for them to be able to come and enjoy themselves when they're here for a competition, and for them to know that we were excited about having them. And then we had a surprise visit by Ed Orgeron, and he gave us a lowdown on what the season looks like and promised that we were going to be throwing to the ends and across the middle and changing things up this year. So it was a great talk. But when I introduced Ed, I said, you know, this spring we were in California, and we were visiting Lod Cook, mm-hmm. which was one of our great graduates. And Ed and Kelly were there on vacation. And now, you know, most head coaches are not going to go do anything for anybody while they're on vacation. They're so busy all the time. But he was good enough to accept an invitation to come by and visit with Lod Cook. He spent an hour with us visiting with Lod Cook and his family. And, boy, that meant the world to him because Lod's had a stroke, and he's trying to recover from that. But to have the head coach take some time out of his personal schedule on vacation and come by and visit your home, what a home run that was. Mm-hmm. It really was great.
Coach O, he does public relations well.
And, he really does.
I know when the new board members were installed this year, I think he gave each one of them a personal call, and that's not only a nice thing to do, that's smart politics as well.
But
this trip to San Diego each year, it's kind of taken a life of its own. People wouldn't think, but the biggest alumni celebration of the year for LSU every year doesn't happen in Louisiana or Texas. It happens in California and San Diego. What happens there every year?
This is their 30th anniversary. So what was interesting about that is that 30 years ago, we got together with Pete and Pam Terrebonne. And they lived there and had a business there. And we asked them to put an alumni group together. So they gathered about three or four people together. And this is long before cell phones and all those kinds of things. So they began calling everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Gave a list. They called everybody, said, look, we want to start an alumni chapter. At the 30th anniversary, one of the individuals who had been called way back when said she really wasn't sure whether this was right. But when she heard that accent, and it was Pete Terrebonne on the phone, she knew it was real. But 30 years of 4,500 people showing up to a crawfish boil.
In San Diego.
Incredible. In San Diego, California. Of course, it didn't start off that way, but it is that way now. It's what an experience it is.
877-217-5757, our number. talk@talklouisiana.org is our email. We're back with Cliff Van Noy. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. We're continuing our conversation with Cliff Van Noy, President and CEO of the LSU Alumni Association. 877-217-5757 is your number. 297-5633 in Baton Rouge. And you can send us an email to talk@talklouisiana.org. And over the last decade, up until the last few years, LSU and other schools of higher education in the state were facing significant budget cuts. And Cliff Van Noy, that, of course, sometimes gets the alumni revved up and sometimes maybe in a good way. By and large, have the graduates, the 250,000 or so who are living of LSU, how have they reacted to this?
Well, I tell you, 4 years ago, we stepped up and answered a call, and that call was to put together a program called the Tiger Advocates. And we've asked Louisianians, our LSU graduates in Louisiana and every parish, to volunteer to be part of what we call the Tiger Advocates. And that is to make sure that the roar of the LSU alumni all across the state is heard by those members of the legislature, that LSU is an important economic engine for the state of Louisiana. The most recent information is that every year $5.1 million of economic impact comes through
billion,
LSU.
Yeah. With a B.
Yeah, billion, yeah. And so what we've done over the last 4 years is to make sure that those who are making the decisions at the legislature know how important LSU is, how important higher education is, and it's just not acceptable mm-hmm. to continually cut and cut and cut and put your flagship institution in a situation where we're playing catch up all the time. So the result has been in the last 4 years that we were looking at fiscal cliffs of $2 billion, $1 billion, over those time periods, and it was pretty difficult, but we were able to get the attention of the legislature, and we have not had a budget cut since 2015. So, and when we did have a mid-year cut, it was restored. We were also able to keep TOPS fully funded for this year as well. So. When the LSU alums speak, people listen, especially on the importance of LSU to the state of Louisiana.
And as I mentioned, I think they're right at 250,000 graduates of LSU now who are living, and about 300,000 when you count those who were deceased. And when I was in school in the early 80s, I remember Paul Merle, the chancellor, celebrated the 100,000th graduate of LSU. So there have been twice as many graduates since then as there were up until right around 1980. Art in on Goodwood notes that Stephen Morey used to come on this show, who was head of the LSU Foundation, and Stephen said that LSU graduates ranked at that time last in the SEC in giving back to their alma mater. That has changed, hasn't it?
It certainly has. In the last 2-3 years, we've moved up. We were close to the bottom. Now we're kind of in the middle of the pack. In middle of the pack, meaning somewhere around 14 or 15% of our graduates giving back. So that's really not acceptable either. And we're doing everything we can with the Alumni Association, the LSU Foundation, and Tiger Athletic Foundation, and the university to increase the number of LSU graduates who are supporting the institution in mm-hmm. any way, in any possible way. So a jump from 6% up to the 15% has really helped, but that's still not good either. So
15% of the graduates
are making a gift each year.
Just right? 15, about yeah. 1 out of 7.
Right.
6 or 7.
So we're in the process of a strategic plan for the Alumni Association that'll take us through the next 5 years. And part of that goal, obviously, is to increase what we're doing in terms of the number of people who are supporting the institution. And we're counting everything. We're counting every gift to Tiger Athletic Foundation, to the Alumni Association, to scholarships, to research programs, to every mm-hmm. division of the university, to every college, all those kinds of things. So it's a in addition to the in our strategic plan, one of the things that we're doing is looking at professional networking, and we've got a great social networking program all throughout the United States through all of our chapters, and much of the time, individuals in all those areas are gathering together to help do fundraisers and those kind of things to help the university. But the professional networking piece is going to be so important in that not only are you gathering socially, but you have you'll have a platform now that'll enable you to pull like-minded people in the like areas of business, industry, education, those kind of things, so they network together to improve their lot in life, whether they just graduated last year or they've been out 5, 10, 15, 20 years. And those institutions like Georgia Tech and others who have put these kind of programs together have really benefited from helping their graduates connect together in a professional manner to help them with their careers.
All right.
And that should help us in the long run in terms of the number of graduates you're supporting and giving back to the institution.
Darryl, in North Baton Rouge, asked if Alabama is now LSU's greatest rival, not only in football, but in other ways as well. And he notes yesterday Jim Nickel was on this show, and mm-hmm. Jim's three daughters all went to the University of Alabama. They are doing, they being the folks in Tuscaloosa,
right.
They're doing what amounts to a full-court press in trying to get kids from Louisiana to go to school there.
Did you know that 50% of the people who attend Alabama are from out of state?
That's right.
I mean,
it's about 25.
Yeah, about 25. They have put a full court press to get as many people as they can to come to Alabama. Now, you know, to get into Alabama is a little bit less difficult than it is to get into LSU. But see, they have complete control over their tuition too. Whereas in Louisiana, we don't have full control of our tuition. And we tried last year and the year before to see if we couldn't get the legislature to say, you know, higher education, you have control of your tuition. You don't have to come to us for for permission to increase your standards or your tuition, right. And that sort of thing. And what they do is Alabama's of the world are manipulating what that out-of-state tuition is in order to compete with the other schools around them to get as many out-of-state students as they can to help them financially.
And I know Alabama and Mississippi, the two states, now offer reciprocal in-state tuition. So if you're in Mississippi, you can go to Alabama as an in-state student and vice versa. Alabama's former, or LSU's former provost, Stuart Bell, is president at Alabama.
Right.
And the football coach there used to coach here, as, as we know. How important is it for, particularly a school in the Southeastern Conference, to have a majestic football program? Is that essential? Is that part of the package, part of the college experience?
Well, I think it is very much so, especially in the Southeastern Conference with the kind of schools. It's the greatest conference, in my opinion. And It certainly is an attractive part of the institution and part of the culture and the fun that it is. Of course, you're there for a great education that will give you an opportunity to have a great living. And one of the most outstanding things about LSU is that when they do the studies on your mid-career earnings, LSU ranks very high up in the top 25 percentile of the mid-career earnings of the kind of graduates that are coming
this
out.
This is in all schools.
All schools, yeah.
And not just the SEC.
Right. Yeah,
the graduates tend to do well, and that's why I think you've penned it. It's essential for the university to get more than 15% of its graduates to write a check every now and then showing their appreciation for having attended the Old War School. Cliff Vannoy, it's a pleasure. Good to see you. Keep up your good work. And a month from now, you'll be in Dallas, the Alumni Association leading a caravan. And if you are interested in more information, 225-578-5612. 225-578-5612. We're back after this pause for the news on WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Your number is 877-217-5757 or 297-5633. And in just a bit, we're going to hear from Mark Ballard, the Capitol Bureau Chief from The Advocate, who joins us most Thursdays, and we'll get his take on what's happening. Jeff Landry, the Attorney General, making some noise about running for governor. We're still waiting for John Neely Kennedy, the junior U.S. Senator from Louisiana, to make up his mind, and if he decides not to run, then Jeff Landry would be a viable candidate. But in his case, unlike Senator Kennedy, unlike Ralph Abraham, the congressman, Jeff Landry would have to give up his job as Attorney General to make a run for governor next year. So we'll talk about it with Mark Ballard. Yesterday on this show, at the end, we had Stephen Maitland Lewis, one of the real fascinating guests that we visit with every few years. He's an award-winning author, a British attorney, a former international investment banker, and he's heavily involved with the Satchmo Summerfest in New Orleans this weekend. And by the way, Louis Armstrong was born August 4th, 1901, in New Orleans. So in a couple of days, we'll be celebrating the anniversary of Louis Armstrong's birth in the Crescent City in Storyville. That was 117 years ago. In fact, President Obama was born on Louis Armstrong's 60th birthday. He'll be celebrating birthday number 57 come Saturday. But Stephen Maitland Lewis yesterday, jazz aficionado that he is, and former pen pal of Louis Armstrong, they wrote letters to each other for 15 years, and this started when Stephen Maitland Lewis was a lad of about 12 in London. And Louis Armstrong wrote back and kept the letters. They're all on display at the Louis Armstrong House Museum in New York City. And yesterday, when I asked him his favorite Louis Armstrong tune, he said he liked Satchmo's "Blue Turning Gray Over You." Good stuff from Louis Armstrong, who died in 1971. He's been gone 47 years, but he certainly lives on in the city that was his home, and he performed at the first Jazz Fest in 1970. Today, the press secretary for the President of the United States, Sarah Huckabee Sanders, the proud graduate of Little Rock Central High School, says Trump derangement syndrome is becoming a major epidemic among Democrats. Instead of freaking out about the booming Trump economy, why not celebrate it? And, of course, there is some pushback from the media who are not happy that the president is using terms like fake news and enemy of the people to describe his adversaries from the press. And all presidents have faced some criticism from the media, and of course, some Democrats have also gotten their fair share of it, including William Jefferson Clinton, who was impeached in the year of 1998. Well, this fellow, Sacha Baron Cohen, has a new show, and the President of the United States has been a target of Sacha Baron Cohen on occasion. And before we get to the latest person to get the brunt of Sacha's humor, here is the president talking about a guy who is a thorn in the side of many elected officials.
Third-rate character named Sacha Baron Cohen. I only wish that he would have been punched in the face so many times. Go to school. Learn about being funny. You don't know.
All right, that's the president giving his sentiments about Sacha Baron Cohen, saying he wished he had been punched in the face. And it is remarkable how the president quite often talks about being bellicose and pugnacious, and looking at our president, it appears that he would have a tough time if someone got bellicose or pugnacious with him. But Sacha Baron Cohen is a fearless guy, and some people, of course, are offended, but others are laughing about what happened to Roy Moore, who, of course, lost his U.S. Senate quest in Alabama after allegations of him misbehaving with underage girls back in the day when he was in his 30s and courting kids who were underage, who, according to him, had permission from their moms to date him. Well, Sacha Baron Cohen interviewed Roy Moore under false pretenses, claiming he was an Israeli official, and he had this wand of sorts that supposedly was a pedophile detector. And when the two met, Cohen and Roy Moore, here's how it sounded.
If Sacha Baron Cohen's new show has taught us anything, it's that, wow, there are a lot of Republicans who are really eager to meet with a hyper-macho Israeli anti-terror expert character. Disgraced former Senate candidate Roy Moore of Alabama is the latest, and this is the moment the anti-terror expert character demonstrated a new marvel of Israeli technology, the pedophile detector.
It is very, very simple to use. You just switch it on, and because neither of us are sex offenders, then it makes absolutely nothing. You just put it on, you put it nearby. Wait, this is obviously a problem. Hold on. It must be faulty. Sorry, is this your jacket?
Yes.
Did you lend the jacket to somebody else, maybe?
No. I've been married for 33.
Sure.
And never had an accusation of such things.
I am not accusing you at all.
Then, if this is an instrument, I'm not a pedophile, okay?
No, but the machine is...
Maybe Israeli technology hasn't developed properly.
This is 99.8% accurate. Well, it is not saying that you are a pedophile, of course not.
I am simply cutting this conversation right now.
No.
Thank you.
Have you been...
Been nice.
Been
I support Israel. I don't support this kind of stuff.
That's Sacha Baron Cohen and Roy Moore. A program note that Monday we'll have Bob Livingston on this show, the former congressman who came within a whisker of being the Speaker of the House. He has written his memoirs. They won't be out until September 11th, but he'll give us a preview. And Bob Livingston says he's open to talk about everything, including his departure, controversial departure from the U.S. House on December 19th, 1998. Remember, he voted for the articles of impeachment against Bill Clinton, then resigned his post when it was acknowledged that he had had an affair, and it was none other than Larry Flint who published this story. And actually, when I say published it, He went very light on Bob Livingston. Dan Moldeo, who's a guest on this show frequently, was the one who got the information, but Larry Flint decided not to print everything he knew about Congressman Livingston after he resigned. Interestingly, Larry Flint has been largely silent during the Trump years, and there are those who believe that perhaps he has been paid not to to investigate Trump. You know, this is something that has happened before, as we know, with the National Enquirer paying for a story that never ran about the president's alleged affair with Karen McDougal of the Playboy fame. And, of course, Stormy Daniels was also paid $130,000, not to speak about her relationship with the president. 877-217-5757, and moving to things closer to home, Jeff Landry, the Attorney General, is now the candidate of the day for governor of Louisiana. He talked with Greg Hilburn of USA Today Network, and Greg's a veteran reporter at the Capitol, as is our guest Mark Ballard. I'm sure they rub shoulders every now and then. And Jeff Landry says, I can beat Governor Edwards, and you can tell him I said that. But does that mean he will run, Mark Ballard?
Well, he's making a lot of noise for it. I think what he was doing more was to try to get the Republicans to those, meaning, you know, U.S. Senator John Kennedy, to make a decision, you know, and to decide if he's going to run. The idea being that we are about a month away from when these campaigns need to start getting geared up and you know, start raising the money and putting the support together. And so he's, I think this is more about him trying to push folks to, you know, basically do it or don't.
Well, Jeff Landry would have to give up his job. Otherwise, he would probably already be in the race. He is a former congressman, a former law enforcement officer. He is president of the National Association of Attorneys General. He has a resume that is substantial, Mark Ballard, and it would appear that he would be a tough candidate. But Governor John Bel Edwards, I suspect in his heart of hearts, would rather run a race against Jeff Landry than against John Kennedy.
Well, I think so. I think that that Jeff Landry is fairly extreme in some of his views, and so that would make a. You think back to the race in Virginia, where the Attorney General, a Tea Party candidate, challenged a sitting Democratic governor and lost. And I'm pretty sure that the governor's office is looking at that. The question is, you know, how extreme is Landry, and is he more extreme than what Kennedy is? Or Ralph Abrams, for that matter.
Yeah, and Jeff Landry has been pointing fingers at the governor, challenging whether the governor is in favor of capital punishment. We'll talk about that, but Jeff Landry, if you've heard his words, he's a believer in capital punishment on steroids. He says he's not only in favor of lethal injections, but if necessary, he'd go for firing squads or hangings, maybe pushing prisoners off buildings, you name it. He wants them dead if they're on death row. We'll talk about it with Mark Ballard. Your number 877-217-5757. We're back. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Becca Dill and Ali Baltazar are producing, and your number is 877-217-5757 for Mark Ballard, Capitol Bureau Chief for The Advocate. As we went to the break, we were talking about Jeff Landry, who through the last few years has taken several shots at the governor, and the governor has occasionally reciprocated, but usually in a milder form than the attorney general, who is an in-your-face politician. And the latest exchange between the two includes this talk about the death penalty, and there have been efforts in other states to execute prisoners that have resulted in botched executions, and the bizarrest thing in which somebody has to be rushed to the hospital after a botched execution, it's just an amazing thing, and of course it amounts to some to cruel and unusual punishment. But Jeff Landry says it's time for the governor to start leading the charge to execute people. The summer of 87, Edwin Edwards executed, or he signed off on the executions of 8 prisoners. John Bel Edwards has not done any capital punishment cases during his tenure as governor. We've only had 2 in the 21st century.
from any governor, including Bobby Jindal, who only had one in his 8 years. So what's Jeff Landry's beef here, Mark Ballard?
Again, I think he is after red meat politics. I mean, there's a couple of things. One is that the death penalty right now is kind of suspended because of these problems that you're talking about with the finding the pharmaceuticals, the companies are not selling them to us, that are required for lethal injection, which is the only way that Louisiana can do it. There's only two inmates on death row out of the 71 that are up there now that actually have execution dates, and both of them are in court, you know, appealing. So, I mean, if we got the drugs today, there would not be a rush to execute anyone. So, I mean, I think that what he's going after is kind of red meat politics. It's the polls have shown that more than half of the state support the death penalty, and I think that's what he's aiming for.
877-217-5757 is your number for Mark Ballard of The Advocate. Dan, excuse me, Dan downtown, you've choked me up. Dan, you're on the air with Mark.
Yeah, Mark, you know, given the red meat politics, do you think it might actually help Jeff Landry here in Red State, Louisiana, that he had to apologize to President Obama after holding up a sign during the State of the Union speech, much like Congressman Joe Wilson of South Carolina had yelled out, quote, "you lie," end quote, the year before?
That was when Landry was serving in the U.S. House of Representatives. By the way, he lost his seat when the state of Louisiana lost his seat. He was thrown into the same district as Charles Bustani, who beat him. And then Jeff Landry rebounded nicely to become Attorney General. But his past actions as a congressman, I'm sure those would be fair game if he were to get into the governor's race, Mark.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that that would be brought up. But it was years ago, and as I think the gentleman mentioned, was that in Red State, Louisiana, that holding up that sign against President Obama probably is not going to hurt him much.
Probably not. 877-217-5757. Randy and Zachary. Hello, Randy. You're on the air with Mark Ballard.
Yes, I just want to make a comment in the history of this state. I don't believe anyone that's been attorney general has ever rose to being governor. Thanks.
All right. That's a good observation. There have been attorneys general through the years who have been there a long time, but Richard Ayoub came close.
Right. That was the one that I was thinking of, that he did attempt to run for governor.
And he lost narrowly to Kathleen Blanco for the runoff slot against Bobby Jindal in 2003. And Richard Ayoub, if he had made the runoff, quite likely he would have defeated Bobby Jindal in 2003. But that did not happen. Billy Gust was there a long time. Jack Grimmie on before him. And since Richard Ayoub, we had Buddy Caldwell, and we had Charlie Foti, and we've had our man Jeff Landry. But I don't think there's anything to preclude an attorney general becoming governor or U.S. senator. It's a rather strong position in Louisiana.
And a statewide position. And I think that, you know, please believe me, thank God for Jeff Landry. He's each week, we're pretty quiet over here at the state capitol, but each week he's bringing up something that attracts attention that we can write about. And he's certainly doing his best to keep his name out in front of the voters this summer.
And most people who've met him like him, but he does come across as a red meat politician. And as you say, in Louisiana, this may play well, Mark.
It may indeed. And again, I guess the state's voters are going to have to decide just how red, how conservative we're going to be if we end up in an election that pits John Bel Edwards and Jeff Landry.
Now, here's a question from a listener, Holly in the Garden District, asking whether these other Republicans are perhaps miffed with Senator Kennedy for playing Hamlet on the bayou, as she puts it, by not making a decision on whether to run for governor.
I like the Hamlet on the Bayou reference. I may steal that from my column, but I think that's exactly what's going on here, is that following what he normally does, and that is to wait till the last minute, before making a decision, I think that some of the Republicans, or many of the Republicans, are saying, look, you can't do that this time. Let's, you know, decide now so that somebody else, if you decide against it, somebody else can jump in and put together a credible campaign.
Henry at the Country Club of Louisiana. Hello, Henry. You're on Talk Louisiana with Mark Ballard.
Well, good morning, Mr. Jim. Good morning, Mr. Mark. I hope y'all are having a great day today. I got a question. I know this is probably kind of a stupid question, but maybe I'm missing something. Have either of you gentlemen seen anything that our pro-life, so-called pro-life attorney general has done that relate to his duties? Because all I've seen him do is put out tweets, press releases, and missives against John Bel Edwards ever since he's been in office.
Well, he certainly has done that a lot. He does put out lots of missives almost on a weekly basis now. There's arguments that he has changed the attorney general's mission, I guess, and is as far as what the state is going to be involved in on a legal basis. He's certainly done that, and he's also taken advantage of child predators on the internet. Taking advantage is not the right word, but I mean he's increased the work in that area.
Another listener asked about a discussion point yesterday. A judge has blocked an attempt to post blueprints for 3D guns. This sparked a heated response from Senator Kennedy, who believes that these 3D guns are okay and that if you're a law-abiding citizen, you should have the right to carry any kind of firearm you want. What do you think about Senator Kennedy taking the hardest of hard right positions on this issue?
Well, I think as a former Democrat that he is taking hard right positions as to wherever he can in Washington. So I think that is also playing for here in.
Yeah, when he does things like that, Mark, it gives you the impression that he's not given up the thought of perhaps running for governor. He's trying to distinguish himself from Governor John Bel Edwards.
Yes, and remember though that I mean he made his bones as a politician, basically attacking the governor, be it Blanco or Foster or Jindal during his time, and then John Bel Edwards when he was elected.
It is amazing that we have another mass shooting in New Orleans, and so few of the statewide officials are talking about this. It's like, oh yeah, another day in New Orleans.
And I'm afraid that that's New Orleans' lot in life, at least as far as the rest of the state seems to be concerned. The only state officials that have actually spoken about this are legislators. But it is certainly nothing has come out from any of the other statewide officials.
Yeah, and John Kennedy in the past has spoken about New Orleans and has gotten criticism for it, but I heard him in his teleconference the other day, and he was really hot on these 3D guns. But if he mentioned New Orleans, I didn't hear it.
And he didn't, because I mean, basically, it just brings up again in my mind that it just brings up again the argument that is going on all across the country about how much regulation guns ought to have.
And in Louisiana, the National Rifle Association packs a wallop, as it does in other states. I mentioned that Mary Landrieu, by and large, Mark, was a good vote for the NRA, meaning she voted with them about 70 or 80% of the time, but that was not sufficient. She occasionally would get C minuses or Ds in her ratings by the NRA, and there's a political price to that.
There is, and particularly in this state, the NRA has been very successful in pushing its agenda and getting and using those ratings as a shorthand way of your pro or anti-guns.
Well, it is always good to catch up with Mark Ballard. We'll be calling next week, Mark, and have a good week. Thanks for joining us.
Okay, great. Thank
See you. And we'll be back tomorrow, same time, same place. Much happening in our world, and Until then, for Becca Dill and for Ali Baltazar, I'm Jim Inkster. Hope you have a fabulous day. Continue listening to 89.3, and thanks for spending an hour with us today. Stay tuned.